There are more than 30,000 gun deaths every year in the United States. We hear them memorialized in headlines.
Man wanted in slaying of four in Georgia, arrested in Indiana.
Teen victims of triple shooting flee to Kansas City fire station for help.
Mother and daughter killed in Bossier City.
17-year-old claims he was playing with rifle when he accidentally shot his girlfriend.
Man sought after allegedly shooting and killing parents and three others.
Four young women shot in Newark during candlelight vigil for recent car crash.
Police hunting for killer and Sunrise shooting.
Woman shot to death in domestic-related case.
Woman shot on bus on Buffalo's east side.
Six killed in spurt of D.C. shooting since Friday morning.
Woman walking dog in Cleveland found fatally shot.
Those headlines from across the country are just from January of this year. So today we're going to talk about the victims, the perpetrators, and the epidemic of violence in the United States. Alex Yablon is here to help us make sense of what we know. He's a reporter at The Trace, which is a nonprofit news outlet focusing on gun-related reporting. Alex, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the numbers. How does January 2019 compare to January 2018?
Well, I actually haven't seen the totals just yet. I do know that we ended last year with total gun deaths up to an all-time high in terms of the raw total on the basis really of suicides, which is something we don't talk about so much. You know, there were almost 40,000 gun deaths in all of last year. And even though the total number of homicides went down, the number of suicides continues to rise year over year, especially among older white men in rural areas.
Let's talk a little bit about the different groups of people who have been targeted just in this month alone. Let's talk about women who are targets. There was one case in Florida where a gunman entered a bank and killed five women. What do we know about the connection between gun violence when women are the intended targets?
A lot of the times people who commit something like a mass shooting like we saw in Florida, that's not their first incident of violent behavior. And it often begins with people closest to them, and it often arises out of personal context, especially relationships. So, you know, the mass shooting in Florida, it follows a pattern that we've seen so frequently. You know, so often when my colleagues and I cover mass shootings, we look for, you know, the background of the shooter just to understand, were there warning signs? And so often you'll see calls to police about domestic violence, fears expressed to family members and acquaintances about this person's riskiness towards acquaintances and intimates, but then it kind of explodes into a mass shooting or a domestic shooting.
This week, the FBI concluded its investigation into the Las Vegas mass shooting where 58 people were killed. What was your reaction to their findings?
Well, it's disturbing to hear that they couldn't find any kind of motive, but in other ways, it's not so surprising. You know, something that I've learned from covering mass shootings for the last 3.5 years is that sometimes we make too much out of motivation. You know, we've seen people commit these kinds of atrocities because they're motivated by, you know, some kind of ideological extremism, or they have a personal dispute with someone who works somewhere, or they have a personal connection to a certain kind of place, or they just feel like this is a public place where there are going to be lots of vulnerable people and they can commit an act of violence that'll have an enormous impact. What's more relevant a lot of times is a pattern of behavior and, you know, an escalating pattern of violence or antisocial behavior, social isolation, and a fixation on acquiring lots of guns.
We just talked about when women are intended targets, but there have also been a number of police and law enforcement who have also been killed and or shot at recently. There were four officers shot in Houston. What do we know about the suspects in the Houston case, for example?
Well, I was reading about that just as I was heading in this morning. I don't think we know a ton about the suspects right now. It was a drug raid. The Houston police had reason to believe that there was heroin being sold out of this house. And when they came to search the place, the two people inside, two middle-aged white folks, started firing at the police. And they injured four police officers. Two of them were actually shot in the face. One of those officers has been released from the hospital.
You said these are middle-aged white folks, the suspects. I want to talk a little bit about that because the question is, are we talking enough about the type of violence that comes out of white communities, in this case towards law enforcement. I mean, it just feels as though we haven't really gotten to that point of talking about this type of violence and the level of access to weapons and who actually commits it.
Yeah, I mean, shootouts like this with police are not that common, which makes them particularly horrifying when they do happen. But the sheer prevalence of guns, certainly, you know, we've done reporting about, you know, in the context of Black Lives Matter and efforts to kind of demilitarize police. One of the things that complicates efforts of police reform is the fact that there is a legitimate fear on the part of police that so many people are so well armed, and, you know, that makes them, you know, officers responding to a particularly tense scene worried that, you know, something could escalate very quickly, as this shootout did in Houston. You know, they found – these weren't handguns they found at the scene, but they found two rifles, you know, semi-automatic rifles in the home of these suspects. And that's those are very, very dangerous, deadly weapons that a bulletproof vest even can't really protect against.
We've been at the top of the segment. We heard a number of headlines just from the month of January of gun violence. And our producers found at least five incidents of mass shootings in the last week or so. Many of these stories are not making headlines, or at least not making national big headlines. Have we become desensitized to this type of violence?
Absolutely. I mean, you know,
and when I say we, I mean media, consumers, everybody.
Oh, yes, totally. I mean, just speaking from my own experience at the Trace, you know, we talk about when it's appropriate to cover mass shootings. And there is a kind of grim logic to discussing which ones we have, you know, we can devote resources to covering. You know, if you start thinking, well, that was just five people shot, which is a horrible thing to think, but it's the truth. You know, something where, you know, five people get shot and two of them die, it doesn't even, you know, it makes like the local TV news, but it won't make, you know, it may not make the New York Times or CNN even.
Let's talk. We have about a minute left. I just want to see, what about the activism? We saw a lot of this after the Parkland shooting. Is it making a difference?
I think you're going to see the biggest difference in the coming months and in the coming weeks. You know, a lot of that activism was channeled into electoral work, and Democrats, who are now solidly the party of gun control in a way that they weren't even 5 or 10 years ago, were swept into power in a lot of states. And you're already seeing many, many states taking up at the beginning of the new legislative session lots of very aggressive gun control measures.
Alex Yablon is a reporter at The Trace, a nonprofit news outlet focusing on gun-related reporting. Alex, thank you for joining us.
It's great being here. Thanks.